Good morning, everybody. I'm going to see if I can raise this mic just a touch. Can you all hear me okay? Everything good? All right. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me. This church looms large in my mind. I was a member, I guess I'm not a member anymore, at Smoke Rise Baptist Church in Stone Mountain, and they've had a long relationship with Edgewood. And so I think of you all, and whenever I think of you as a community building the kingdom of God in this neighborhood. And I'm just so happy to be here with you. In the summer of 2019, my wife and I had the chance to be here on Sunday evenings for a service that Joy and Marquette led, and I loved that time that we were able to spend here in this building. Being in this room, being in this sanctuary, it does something to my soul. It lifts me in a way that few other places do. There's this idea of sacred space that I really like, that sacred space isn't something that we protect or guard or set up apart, but sacred space is something that it's a place that's worn with prayer, right? It's a place that people have prayed and prayed and prayed until when you walk into that room, prayer is just a little bit easier because the path has been laid there already by years and years of that prayer. And that's how I feel being here with you all. So thank you for inviting me into this. And so 2019, I went to school with Joy, and that's how I met Joy. That was way back in 2017 when we started at McAfee, and in 2019 is when I kind of started to know a little bit more about Edgewood, and that was some of the last time I was here regularly. But I wanted to tell you all something about your pastors, if I could, tell you something about Joy and Marquette. I'm going to see if I can raise this music band as well. That might not happen quite as easily as the mic. There we go. I'm figuring this stuff out. Look at me go. So I wanted to tell you three things about your pastors. We'll start with two, and I'm going to bury the third one a little bit later to make sure you're paying attention. The first thing that Joy ever said to me was, don't talk to me while I'm chewing. To be fair, she was chewing, and I was about to talk to her. It was as we were starting school, we were at a little lunch mingler thing, and I had been talking to the person on this side of me, and I was turning to engage in small talk with the person on the other side of me, and she headed me off and said, "Don't talk to me while I'm chewing." And so I waited. And that moment told me that conversations with Joy weren't going to always go the way that I thought they were going to go. But that they were going to be better, because after she finished chewing, we then had good conversation about the ways to engage in conversation with each other. The second thing I want to tell you is I met Marquette on August 21st, 2017. And the reason I remember that date specifically is because it was my first day of classes at McAfee, and that was scary. And because it was a solar eclipse, I met her in a parking lot during a solar eclipse. And that's got to be an omen, right? Anything that happens in the midst of a solar eclipse, it's something. So far it's been good. So far it's been a good omen. Time will tell. We'll see what happens next. So like I said, I'm gonna bury the third thing, so you'll have to stick around for that. But as we turn our attention to our text for this morning, I want to ask if you all can do me a favor. I work with kids a lot. I work with preschoolers. I work with children. I work with kids of all ages. One of the things that we like to do is we like to take our hands just like this, put your hands up just like this, and wiggle your fingers, put them on your belly, take a deep breath in through your nose, and out through your mouth. One more time, in through your nose, and out through your mouth. I like to do that because I think it just helps remind us that we're here. All of us are here. Our bodies are here. Our souls are here. Our minds are here. I think it just helps us to lock ourselves in. And I'm so glad that you're here. And I'm so glad that I get to be here with you. So this passage, Luke 15, it's the lectionary passage for today, for March 27th, 2022. The lectionary is this resource that has a three-year cycle of Bible passages. It helps pastors and preachers and Christians to figure out what to talk about on a weekly basis, right? And if you go each week, it has a Old Testament text, a Psalm, a Gospel, and a New Testament text. And if you go through the whole 3 years, you kind of hit the high points of the Bible. It leaves some stuff out, and you can have conversations about why it leaves out, what it leaves out, but you make it through a lot of Scripture if you follow through on that. So today, all over the city of Atlanta, all over Georgia, all over the country, all over the world, people are talking about this text together, which is beautiful to me, and one of the reasons why I wanted to spend some time here in this passage. But honestly, when Joy asked me to preach and told me the date, and I looked at the lectionary and I saw this passage, I was like, okay, well, not doing that one, because it's the prodigal son. And that story is so familiar. It's one of the most famous teachings of Jesus, and it was scary to think about coming to visit you all, not knowing most of you, and saying, here is a story that a lot of people know. Let me come and talk to you about it for a little bit. And so I almost bailed on it. But then I got to listen to Sharon's sermon from a couple weeks ago, where she preached on the Good Samaritan, and she provided so much new information from that, and then I felt a little bit more like, okay, not only do I have the big shoes of this passage to fill, but I have the big shoes of this preacher to fill. And so I kept spinning around this passage. I read it, and I read it, and I read it, and I realized that what I was trying to do was I was trying to find this kind of idea of, sure, you may know this story, but you've never thought of it this way. Or maybe I could find that one Greek word that's obscure enough to unlock some new meaning. And I realized that it was this thing that happens so much in the movies and the television shows we watch, right? There's this movie that you loved in childhood, and all of a sudden, 30 years later, it's like, you may have loved these characters, and they're back. Check in on the adventures they're up to now. And it's like, oh, great, I'll go see that movie, sure, sure. And it's like, you know, we had movie 1 and movie 2, but what about movie 1.5? What happened in between there? And then there's a television series, and there's a documentary about how they made that. And I realized that I was kind of feeding into this of, here's a story you've always known, but what if we told it a different way? And every time I kept working at that, I kept working to find this new way into the story, and it just wasn't happening. Any way I tried to take it felt insincere. It felt like I was exploiting some little aspect of this just to be sensational or something like that. And I couldn't grab a hold of it anywhere. So I just kept circling, and I kept reading, and I would read it, and I would write down the words that stood out. And at one point I decided, okay, you know what, I'm going to zoom out a little bit. I need to get out of just this passage. I had the chance to listen to Marquette's sermon where she talked about as Jesus heads to Jerusalem, he's got these kind of three groups of people, right? He's got the disciples, he's got the Pharisees and the scribes is listed here in this chapter, and then the crowds. And it's these three groups that are kind of shuffling around and in different positions. And Jesus is heading to Jerusalem, And so much is about to happen there. Jesus is going to be murdered. And the people closest to him are going to witness that. Some of them are going to abandon him. It's these terrible, awful, heavy things are about to happen. And as Jesus gets closer and closer to this, the stuff he's talking about is heavy. And it's dense. And we're in Luke 15, and Luke 16 is the parable. It's called the parable of the dishonest manager. Do you all know this story? It's the manager who's about to get fired. So he goes and tells everybody, you owe my boss $100. Just make it 50. And then he goes to somebody else and says, you owe my boss $30. Let's make it 15. And then his boss says, good job. You did a great job. That was very shrewd of you. You're not fired anymore. And it's like, What is this story about? What is happening here? And we have these stories of weeping and gnashing of teeth, and we have these stories of what's to come, and all of this just heavy, heavy, dense things. And some of it I don't understand at all and would not want to preach on here in front of you. And some of it I understand and wouldn't want to preach in front of you because I wish I didn't understand parts of it. And it's not what I want to spend a lot of my time thinking about. And so as all these things are building, here in Luke 15, and in this story of the lost son, the story of the man with two sons, and the two stories that come before it, we have the story of a woman who had 10 coins and lost one and spent all of her time finding that lost coin and threw a party when she found it. And we have a shepherd who had 100 sheep, and one sheep wandered off, and he left the 99 behind to find the one, and when he brought it back, he threw a party, right? Here in Luke 15, we have reprieve. We have rest from the complications and the heavy and the burden as Jesus looks out to the people around him and says, I love you. And that's what I found here is Jesus on his way to Jerusalem and all that's about to happen. He took a moment and he sat down and he looked out and he said, I love you. And I think he wanted us to remember that. I think he wanted the people around him as they're about to see everything that's about to happen to hear that from him. I love you. And so we have those three groups of people, and here in Luke 15, we only get mention of two of them. The disciples aren't mentioned in this chapter, and I don't know if they weren't there. I don't know if they were somewhere else. I don't know if they were sitting behind Jesus, and so they were kind of with him, but Jesus was speaking out to other people. But as this chapter begins in Luke 15, we know that Jesus is talking to the Pharisees and the scribes. And then it says that here come the sinners and the tax collectors. So it's not the crowds, it's the sinners and the tax collectors. Which I think tells us a lot more about the author and the people who are in that room, maybe more so than the people coming into the room, right? Because describing someone as a sinner rather than as a crowd, that's a choice to make, right? We are more than our mistakes. We are more than our choices, good or bad, and to walk into a room and someone to say, "Here's the sinner." It's not necessary, right? But it's there. And I think it tells us a little bit about, maybe it tells us a little bit about Luke. Maybe it tells us a little bit about the people describing these scenes to Luke, because Luke wasn't there, right? He's getting these from, he's interviewing people and gathering information for this. And so I don't know why that became the descriptor for these people, but it is. We have Jesus, we have the Pharisees and the scribes, and here come the sinners. And it's just this dichotomy. And that's kind of what builds the story, because here are the Pharisees and scribes sitting with Jesus. And when I imagine this scene, I imagine Jesus sitting, because he's talking a lot, and I hope that he's sitting. And I imagine the Pharisees and the scribes kind of sitting with him. And then over their shoulders, here come the sinners. And at the beginning of Luke 15, it says that the Pharisees and the scribes, they started to grumble about the kind of people that Jesus chose to spend time with, the kind of people that are coming in. Here come the sinners. And so Jesus tells a story. He tells a story of a woman who lost a coin and looked everywhere for it. When she found it, she threw a party. He tells the shepherd who had 100 sheep and lost one, left the 99 behind to find the one. And when he found the one, he threw a party. He tells a story of a man who had two sons who waited and waited and waited for his lost son to come home. And when he did, he threw a party. But in that last story, in our text for today, there's this twist, right? Because the first two stories end with a party. You never hear anything from the 9 coins that were found the whole time. You never hear anything from the 99 sheep, how they felt about the shepherd going after that one sheep, probably again. Because if you have one sheep that wandered off once, he's going to wander off more than once. But this story has this twist at the end. And if you like jokes, if you like storytelling, you know that repetition of three, right? You set it up, and then there comes the punchline. There comes the twist. There comes the lesson. And that's what we have here, because we hear from the other son. The other son comes and says, "Why are there no parties for me? How come you've done all of this for this brother, this son of yours who made these choices, who took off, who abandoned our family? How could you do this for him? How could you celebrate him like this? How come you don't celebrate me?" And I think what he's asking is, how come you don't love me? Because he sees the love that the father is giving to the lost son, and the older son is saying, "Why don't you love me? How come you don't love me?" And the father's reply is simple. He says, I do love you. I have always loved you. And I love your brother. I love you." Back in 2017, we were talking about the way that stories are presented with us of, you know the story, but do you really know the story? Do you know the backstory? Do you know this story? Well, in 2017, Disney did one of those things where they took a story that we know and love, and they said, "What if we changed it just enough to where you gave us just a little bit more of your money?" And millions of people around the world said, "Deal." And so Disney made the live-action Beauty and the Beast. And calling that movie live-action is a stretch, right? Because it's a mythical beast in a castle full of living furniture. And that's not really live-action. But I watched it. I said, "Disney, deal, here's my money. Not only will I give you my money, I will give you money monthly so that I can maybe watch this movie one day if I feel like it." But has anybody seen original Beauty and the Beast, 1991? First animated picture ever to be nominated for Best Picture in the Oscars. Tonight is Oscars night, I think, so there's a bit of trivia for you. What about 2017 version? Anybody seen the 2017 version? Anybody never seen any Beauty and the Beast? All right. Yeah, no shame. That's all right. Well, I saw the 2017 one, and it was good. I enjoyed it. I saw it in theaters, and I did enjoy it. And there's one of the things that they did is they added a song into this new one. It's right after, so the beast, big scary beast, kidnaps Belle. Because first he kidnapped her father, and then Belle says that, hey, let my father go and I'll be your prisoner. And the beast says, deal. And then he begins to fall in love with her. And so she runs away. And this is the point where I say this is a sermon about love. And I am not endorsing the love of this movie, because it's bad. Captivity and prisoners, that's not. But there's this song that they add in here where Belle is running away and the beast is realizing that he loves her. And again, Messy. But the song is called Evermore, and I love this song. And let me tell you how I know that I love this song. When I like a song, I play it on repeat far, far too much, to the point where in 2017, my most played song on Spotify, Evermore from Beauty and the Beast. There was one time, I think Joy asked me something about what music I was listening to, and I told her this song, and I like read some of the lyrics to her, and she said, are you okay? And it was at that moment that I realized I should diversify my my listening. But the song the beast sings at this moment it's about how love makes you vulnerable. He's realizing that his whole life, ever since he was cursed by the witch and all that kind of stuff, he's lived alone in this castle, and he didn't have to worry about anything else. The only threats to his safety, the only threats to his well-being, to his life, were of his own body. He only had to be worried about himself. But with the introduction of love into his life, he now has somebody else to be concerned about. Now if something happens to her, it affects him. It affects his well-being. It affects his safety. It affects his life. Love makes him vulnerable. And I think that's why I love that song so much, is because it expressed that idea that love makes you vulnerable. That love means that you are giving a part of yourself to someone else. You are saying, what happens to you happens to me. And here in our text, back in Luke 15, I think that's part of what Jesus is saying, right? Jesus is about to give all of himself. He's on his way to Jerusalem to give everything he can. And what he's saying to the Pharisees and the scribes and the sinners and the tax collectors is, I love you, and I'm going to give you everything that I have. When I give everything that I have, know that it is in love that I do it. And I think this is extra meaningful because this is the Son of God speaking. This is God speaking. Love makes God vulnerable. Because love means that you give a part of yourself to someone else and say, what happens to you happens to me. And if God is saying, I love you, what God is saying is, I am sacrificing myself for you, for us. There is a love between us, and that is going to connect us to each other. Love makes us vulnerable. Last year, in 2021, this book of prayers came out. It's called A Rhythm of Prayer. It's a collection of prayers edited by Sarah Bessie, and it's a wonderful book. It's prayers all written by Christian women. And one of the prayers in here was written by Dr. Shaniqua Walker-Barnes. She was a professor at McAfee when I was there. She's still a professor here in Atlanta. And the prayer is entitled Prayer of a Weary Black Woman. And the prayer opens with her asking God to help her hate white people. And the reason for that is that she is angry, and she is hurt, and she is weary of the things she has gone through in her life. And she begins to talk about how her love, her friendships, her connections, her relationships are heavy and are making her weary because she's stretching out her arms in love. And they keep getting pushed down over and over and over. So she asks God for hate as kind of an armor, as a way to protect herself again. Because love makes you vulnerable. Not only does love make you vulnerable, but love is heavy. To hold your arms out, your arms get tired quickly. And to have somebody pushing down on your arms over and over and having to keep lifting them up, it makes you weary quickly. And so she begins by asking for hate as this kind of armor of protection. But as she goes through the prayer, she begins to converse with God, and she hears from God, keep going in love. Keep going in love. It is heavy. It is hard. You are tired. I am here with you in love. Keep going in love. And I appreciated this prayer from her because it expressed the hardship of love, the pain that can come with it, the exhaustion that can come with the burden of love, because it's heavy. And Dr. Walker Barnes, in this prayer, she prays for the rest that can come with apathy, the rest that can come with hate, the rest of not having to stretch out her arms to people who don't want them. But instead, it's like that picture of the story of Moses in the Old Testament, that he has to keep his arms raised and people come alongside him and lift his arms up so that they stay up. They strengthen him. And that's what I hear God saying to Dr. Walker Barnes in this prayer. And I think in Luke 15, Jesus is telling us of this love too, right? This heavy love, the love that means searching for what's lost, knowing that there are 99 sheep right here, but you have to go find the one. The heavy weight of the Father who sits and looks out to the road day after day after day, after the Son took half of everything and left, and sitting there and waiting and waiting. And Jesus, the Son of God, came to show us how to love and how to love one another. And that's the heavy weight that he's about to take on the cross, right? He's about to endure so much. And again, in this passage, I hear Jesus saying, I love you. Hear that love. I'm about to pick up this heavy burden. Hear this love. The third thing I want to tell you about your pastors. Joy and Marquette taught me so much about friendship. When school first started, one of the things that I learned from them is that friendship can be cemented in a hurry. My wife, Ashley, stayed at Joy and Marquette's house for about a week before she ever met them, because we ended up dog-sitting. There are three wonderful dogs there for a little time. I learned from them that friends do whatever they can to support each other whenever they can. And I think one of the things that clicked for me is I think that they were the first friends that I ever had who regularly said, I love you, to me. That was not a part of my life before then. And so I remember having meals with them or hanging out with them, and Joy or Marquette would say, I love you. And I would say, or they would say, I love you. And I would say, yeah, good to see you. It was so great. Yep, okay. And eventually I got to this point where they would say, I love you. And I would say, love y'all. Because there was something about just that little bit of pluralization that just lessened it just a little bit. But eventually I got there. I got to the point where I could return, I love you, with intention and with singularity. Because there's something about that singularity, right? If Jesus were to stand in this room in Luke 15 and just say to the room of the Pharisees and scribes and the sinners and say, love y'all. That's just like, okay. And there would be people in the front of the room who would say, he wasn't talking to them back there. And there would be people in the back of the room who would say, was he talking to me? Does he know what I've done? Because I've heard so many pastors, so many preachers say, love people, love people, love people, love people. But then the next sermon is about, there's this group of people, and I'm not so sure they really deserve love. And so that pluralization of love that comes first is then kind of canceled out by that next little bit, right? So if Jesus would have just stood at the front of the room and said, love y'all, there's all these opportunities for me, him, her, them, are we sure? And so I love this story in Luke 15 of the man with two sons, because Jesus takes this pluralization of the room, this group of people, and takes it and turns it into a father and two sons. He takes the plural and makes it singular. So now we don't have these groups of people, but we have a man with two sons. And the man says to both of his sons, he grabs them both by the face and says, I love you. I love you. Even as both of the sons approach the father in their own ways and say, can you love me? Do you love me? And at the points that they are weak, and the father grabs them and says, I love you, with intention and with singularity. And so the way that I imagine this room that Jesus is in, I said, I imagine him sitting, and I imagine the Pharisees and the scribes here, and I imagine here come the sinners. And I, as I was circling this passage and circling, I started thinking about eye contact and what is Jesus doing here. Because this, here come the sinners, and the Pharisees and the scribes begin to grumble. And that's who Jesus was talking to first. So I think his eyes stay low first. And he starts telling the story of this woman who lost a coin. And she looks and she looks and she looks. And I think there at the last second, he looks back. He says, she threw a party when she found it. She was so happy. And then his eyes come back down and he says, there was a shepherd, 100 sheep. One sheep wandered away and the shepherd left the other 99 behind. And the shepherd went out looking for it. And there at the last second, his eyes go up again. And he says, he found the sheep. And he was so excited. He threw a party. And now we have this third story. And he starts talking about this son who took half the inheritance and squandered it. Just ruined it. And I think his eyes stay low for a while because this is the story the Pharisees and the scribes want to hear, right? They want to hear what's going to happen to this son who took his inheritance and squandered it like those sinners in the back of the room. Let's hear what's about to come. We know these stories of the weeping and gnashing of teeth. Let's hit them one more time right here, right now. I think Jesus' eyes stay low for an extra minute. Even as the son begins to say, maybe I can come back and be a servant. Maybe I can just work in my father's household for a little bit. And then he lifts his eyes one more time as the father runs to his son and grabs him up and puts the robe on him and the ring on him and says, we are going to have the biggest party you have ever seen because my son is home. And then here comes the second son, and Jesus' eyes go back down. He says that son was frustrated. He was out in the field working. He didn't even know his brother had come home. He heard the sound of the party going on, and he refused to go in. And the father goes out to him and says, your brother is home. Come celebrate with us. And the son says, don't you love me? I've done so much for you. Don't you love me? And I think Jesus' eyes stay low, and he says, I love you. Everything that I have is yours. I love you. He speaks with vulnerability. He speaks with the heaviness of love. He speaks with the singular love of God as he turns these groups of people and says, I love you. Not I love y'all, but I love you. And here from Luke 15, the journey to the cross continues. And these groups, they converge a few more times, right? We have the disciples and the Pharisees and the scribes and the crowds. They kind of keep crisscrossing over each other in these different ways. And things are going to get more intense. They're going to get harder. And I think that this is a part of Jesus' message through all of it, is looking at each of these people and saying, I love you, and you should love you. Because Luke is telling us that here come the sinners. But what Jesus is saying is, here comes my child. Here comes the child of God. And I love you. And I think Jesus is saying, you can love each other. Because there's a party going on. I'm not asking you to come into a business meeting with your brother who's come home. I'm asking you to come enjoy this huge celebration. Come in whenever you're ready. Because all I have is yours. And so, reading this story, I didn't find anything new to bring to you all. But what I found is something that I think has always been here for us, and I was so grateful was here on the way to Jerusalem, because it is so heavy. And as we get closer and closer to the cross, I begin to look away, because I don't want to see some of the things that are about to come. But here in Luke 15, we just have this moment of Jesus sitting with these people to tell them of the simple and the overwhelming love of God. Thank you.